All right, folks, welcome back to Water Cooler Talk with, well, Arturo is working tonight, so it's just going to be me, Ricky, and special guest Armando. Armando, give us a little introduction to yourself.
Hi, I'm Armando, and this is myself.
Nice.
I'm just a guy from the office, usually the loud guy in the office. Usually got a lot of opinions, and I hope to be sharing them with you today.
Excellent, excellent. So usually we have the Ricky rant, but today we're gonna have our special guest do a special rant. So let's start it off with Armando then.
The thing that I think upsets me the most is office wastefulness. Just the sheer wastefulness of the office environment is it's something that truly, truly just gets me wild.
What specifically, what
It's
waste
just
are we talking
all
about?
right. So let me hit you with the predicate. You guys are familiar with the office. You're familiar that, I feel like we have a lot of sedentary people that work with us. People aren't really clean. We got an office fridge, and that fridge is really gross. Usually, you understand they got that new policy where, they're trying to be more mindful about cleaning the refrigerator. Well, I had an item in the refrigerator. A brand new item,
Okay.
an item that isn't expired. It's a closed container, but it was thrown away.
Oh,
And
that
that is
was that the container? It was like black and orange.
no. Oh, it was beige and black. It was a carton container
Oh, no. Okay.
of it was a creamer, but it was closed. As in unopened.
But
As in.
wait. So do you are you saying that whoever cleaned out the fridge should have inspected the packaging and then made a determination that this was still
Well,
good
it's just.
and should not be disposed of?
Yeah, it's just sheer wastefulness. I understand that they hit you with a million emails and they got a trope of people running up and down the aisles. Hey, this we're doing this. We're doing this. We're cleaning the fridge. But not everybody gets those
Okay.
messages.
I'm un you know what? I mean, you recognize the big fact that, they do give fair warning
Yeah,
that,
no, I completely
Thursday
understand.
at 2, this is going to happen. So, but you know what? I agree with you that there is wastefulness, in the sense that, you have all you have a lot of people in the office bringing food to the office,
Correct.
and for some reason or another, and I'm guilty of it as well. They don't finish their food. They don't take it home. They don't do anything with it. They just let it,
Oh, they just leave it
rot.
in there and they let the stuff rot, and you have yogurts there that are a year old. That to me is disgusting. But more importantly,
It's also a sin, I think.
oh,
We're wasting tremendous amounts of food, and there's a lot of
agreed.
people out there,
Agreed.
right?
Yeah,
The
certainly.
age-old argument.
Certainly.
There's kids starving in Africa. So that, I mean, I agree with you about that we are wasteful, but in that
Now,
day too, we brought food to the office. We had a Worksgiving, and I'm sure that there's going to be a good portion of that food, going to waste.
actually, I feel like everybody cleared it out. There wasn't a lot left over, just to give
Oh,
you a heads
really?
up.
Okay. Yeah, because
Now,
people
fantastic.
ended up, telling other folks from the other teams to come get a plate, and Okay.
it's going to get eaten up.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
certainly.
That's fantastic.
This will
Awesome.
not go to waste. My three plates tell you that will not go to waste.
Ha.
No, but more importantly, like it goes to show that people aren't conscious of the things that they do in the office when it comes to waste. So you have a brand new product inside a refrigerator. It's closed. Nobody took the time to even open the package to determine whether or not it's wasteful. Nobody looked at an expiration date, and I guess they have it's a very black and white policy at this point, but
Yeah.
th there's that that's just a small portion of the wastefulness. You also have, we work in what should be a paperless environment, but people are always passing out papers printing? That we don't need, print using the printer. Yeah. We don't need that. It's a paperless environment. Yo, it's 2019. We live in the future.
I agree with you.
You don't need that. We don't need people. I don't need somebody to give me a printout of something you've already emailed me. That's just sheer wastefulness. I can't stand it. More importantly, as working in this office environment, people don't know where we work here, right? People
don't know where. Okay,
no. Perfect. I think it should stay.
Yeah, let's keep it anonymous. I've assisted the office manager. You remember when we moved buildings a couple of years ago? We moved from one of our work buildings to another. We changed offices. During that time, they were just throwing away office equipment. And I'm not talking about donating. I'm not talking about proper disposal or recycling. No, they were just chucking it in bins. And I'm certain that recently they just cleaned out an office. I'm certain that they're going to do that as well. Just chuck whole monitors in the wastebasket. I find that egregious. I think it's disgusting, and I think it's a corporation should not be functioning that way.
I agree. There's a lot of waste. I mean, when it comes to the refrigerator, I mean, I feel like that that argument is like as old as time. Since the beginning of like office work, people have been leaving shit in the refrigerator. And
yeah, it's a don't touch my shit argument.
Yeah. don't touch my shit argument. But
you know what I think is sad is that I agree with you on the wastefulness of the two examples that you provided, but that's happening all over the country. So you can only imagine
the
how much
waste
we're throwing out. You know, imagine how prevalent this must be in America and how much waste we're just creating, you know?
Yeah, man. I can't wait until we get those waste baskets. The what is it? In Back to the Future, where he had the fusion converter, he just threw the banana peels and the cans into the fusion converter. I can't wait till I can't wait until we're in that version of the future.
That's the dream. You know what? I was thinking. I read on those, but nonetheless, I read that you know, Microsoft tested, you know, shortening the work week. So instead of working 40 hours, maybe you work 30 or something like that. But, you know, just reducing the amount of time that you work during the week. And supposedly there was like a significant increase in productivity. I don't remember the exact number, but I'm going to say 20% plus.
Yeah, I've read that as well. But when you do something like that.
And in light of.
When you do something like that, what do they do with the pay? Like if you're an hourly employee. That's great for somebody who's salaried, but if you're an hourly employee, do they offset that cost?
I'm not sure. I think, you know what? I haven't thought about that aspect of it, but what I was thinking is in relation to what you just finished saying about waste, you know, not only do you increase productivity, but you also maybe now reduce the amount of waste that you're creating because of the office environment.
Correct.
And in that way, maybe you save money, right? Because now you don't have to pay for the disposable of all this garbage. Sure. And you can supplement that in the employee's income. I don't know.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, the article was saying that they implemented that program in Japan over the summer.
Over the summer, you say?
Yeah. Okay. So you, I think we lost Paul's audio there too.
Hello? Oh, still there? Yeah.
And now I heard. All right. But whatever came after the summer just went
so
down.
So according to CNN, that productivity went up 40% over the period last year. This new 4-day schedule. And it was a whole set of rules, too. the article, it was saying that they wanted managers to cut down on the time they spent in meetings and responding to emails. And meetings shouldn't last more than 30 minutes. And I mean, it looks like it works, but I have a hard time believing that companies here, if they're not like startups and, you know, those companies with young employees, would you know, institute
something. Something that's not in the tech sector, something that's not a startup or a media company. I don't see other companies with salaried workers doing that.
No. Not in the U.S.
Not in the U.S. And it's not to say that that model isn't viable. It's just the American mindset tells you otherwise. You know, it's really ingrained in our brains that a 40-hour work week should be the minimum. You have plenty of people.
Let me just say one thing in light of what you just said. You know, there was a point. Once upon a time, everybody worked. It was a 6-day work
week. Right.
You know what I mean? And it was for significantly more time than 40 hours. You know what I mean?
Correct.
And then I think it was Ford who instituted the 2-day work week. Right. Weekend. And I don't remember the reason why he came up with this idea. I don't think it's as benevolent or altruistic. I just think, you know, he probably had some hidden agenda behind it. But in any case, it became a thing. And now, you know, many, you know, professionals and for many, you know, people who work a job, you have a 2-day weekend. Sometimes now it's not necessarily Saturdays and Sundays, but you have 2 days off. Typically, most people, a lot of people.
I think the reason why they did that was to avoid accidents and to increase productivity. I'm just guessing that.
Could be.
Yeah, I'm guessing that a lot of people may have died.
It's definitely possible. But the thing is that once it was unheard of, and slowly but surely, it became a thing, and now it's a standard. And the reason I brought it up is because I think that this is, you know, the rumblings of something new. I think and within my lifetime, I'm going to see the 3-day weekend, you know, Friday, Saturdays and Sundays. You know, you don't work. You work Monday through Thursday. And that's just the beginning. But I won't go more from there. But I think that I think that my daughters, when they begin working, they're going to see the 3-day weekend be like a common thing.
Yeah, I think I think a lot of new. Well, I don't want to say. I think there are some new companies that are testing that. And another benefit behind a shorter work weekend is there's less expenses. You don't have to have the power on through the 3-day work weekend. Yeah. You're saving resources.
Exactly.
You're cutting down your emissions, basically, right? Like
you're cutting down on waste.
Your carbon footprint.
That's really what we want in the future, right? We want corporations to reduce their personal footprint. Then we want individuals to reduce their personal footprint. So
I mean that would be great in a urban environment, like jobs in the city. You know, having it cut down to a 4-day work week, that would be great. And then for the suburbs, you have less people driving to work in the mornings and everything, so that would cut down on pollution greatly. Like that would be a great measure for like a climate change bill. You know, like, you know, incentivize companies to, you know, go to a 4-day work week, you know, and help the environment while you're at it.
Yeah. Can you imagine going into New York City and not seeing any cars on a Friday? That would be fantastic.
That would be.
Although you could argue that there might be more traffic because more people are off.
Well, I mean, they're gonna institute that new toll system. So, you know, Lower Manhattan is going to be quite empty in a couple of years because it's going to cost a lot more to.
You know what? That's fine. Just leave the taxis in New York City. Leave the scooters, the bikes, and stuff like that. There's plenty of ways to get around. You don't need your personal car.
Yeah, you
have
to be really.
Walk for you know, God forbid, you have to walk a mile or two.
Yeah,
you know. Try it. It's a beautiful thing. You know what I mean?
They should really,
if you can do it, you should enjoy
it. They should really institute a tax on anybody owning a vehicle in New York City, to be honest.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
In Manhattan, I want to clarify.
Manhattan. Yeah. I can't imagine you owning a car in Manhattan. What's the point? What's the purpose?
Exactly. I don't understand.
that to me makes no sense. You have, I mean, listen, the buses in Manhattan are shit, so I would never do that. But you have the rail system, and you have all these rails, cabs, Ubers, you got scooters, you got bikes. Exactly. Come on.
Many different ways to get around.
And if you need to go to the suburbs to go to the mall, you can just rent one of these vehicles by the hour.
Exactly.
And then,
exactly.
So it's really not a big deal.
I think Zip is pretty popular in Manhattan.
Yeah.
I can't imagine you doing that. Actually, my girlfriend, she works in Manhattan, and she refuses to take the train. She just won't do it. She would rather walk.
For safety reasons, or she just thinks it's
a little bit of everything. It's like
is this safety. Person Caucasian?
No, my girlfriend is not Caucasian.
No, just for the listeners, you know.
My girlfriend is not a Caucasian girl. She's a tall Latina with curly hair. So
wait, can we as tall as you or tall?
No. Okay, so I'm 6'3", she's 5'9". Okay. Maybe 5'10".
Okay.
She's not as tall as me. But yeah, she's I will say this. She gets a lot of harassment on the streets.
I think that unfortunately
that happens a lot in New York City, especially on the trains and in Port Authority. It just happens a lot. Sometimes she gives me a story and I'm like, yo, I wish I was there to whoop that guy's ass.
All right, we're back. And I know Armando was touching upon his girlfriend getting harassed in the subways. And I wanted to, you know, actually touch upon that a little bit more and talk about how you know, in New York City, you know, everywhere, like just the harassment of women on the street and how, you know, how you guys see it, you know firsthand. And I know Ricky has daughters. How many daughters you have? One, two?
15.
Two daughters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I definitely want to get your thoughts on it.
Well, I mean, obviously, I think it's terrible. You know, I wish there was a way to put an end to it. I mean, and perhaps there is. You know, it's just a matter of educating our young men from an early age that, you know, that type of behavior is unacceptable. You know what I mean? Everybody should be, has the right to feel safe, you know what I mean? And the subway is definitely, we want people to feel safe on the subway, you know? And if this is, you know, this type of behavior, obviously, you know, has an impact on them, then it has to come to an end. Plus, you know, I mean, we're in 2020. We should have progressed. Am I wrong? I mean, this is like something, you know, I would be... I wouldn't be surprised to hear in, you know, in countries that suppress women, you know what I mean? Like India, I know, had a huge problem with this. And now they're going through, you know, trying to find a way to, you know, get the culture to change and you know, pay women more respect, right?
Yeah, yeah, they're trying to make moves.
It takes time. Yeah.
They're trying to make moves. I mean,
but maybe we need to be practicing some of that here at home, so that, you know, women such as your girlfriend can feel safe going out anywhere, you know, for that matter. You know what I mean? Whether it be the subway, whether it be a nightclub, or just walking home at night, or passing a construction site, you know, in the old days it used to be hey, you know,
that is the lightest catcalling that you're gonna get. That is the lightest.
Trying to be Disney friendly.
Yeah,
but you know, if it's a problem, and I believe that it is, we should begin, you know, trying to, you know, find ways to at least minimize it, you know, make it as rare as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I see, you know, just going through some articles that it appears that there has been some studies on the financial effect on women trying to avoid harassment, like, you know, Armando's.
My girlfriend will take the longest route just to avoid it.
Yeah.
Yeah, understandably, she's been followed on streets. Guys have threatened to hit her because she ignores them.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, holy, it's bad.
Wow, that's,
it's bad.
Oh my God, that's,
yeah. Yeah, it's, two weeks ago, some guy followed her down the block, chased her across the street, asked her for her number, and she's like, "Nah, I got a boyfriend," and he got aggressive with her. He got aggressive. Oh, he didn't touch her or anything like that because he was with another woman, but like, he cursed her out and threatened her.
What? Yo, people are crazy.
Brazen. People are brazen. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
You know, nah, like,
that's unacceptable, man.
Well, it goes to show that there's some men that think that women are just here for the pleasure,
second class citizens.
Yeah, it's like, you're only here because you could possibly give me something of value. You know what I mean? It's not that you yourself are a person. It's that you yourself you're an item of desire. Yeah. That's it. You're property.
Yeah.
But my thing is, what guy in their right mind thinks that approach works? I'll tell you this. When I was single, I struggled with you know, the proper approach. You know, like, how do I approach a girl without, you know, looking like a creep?
I mean, sure. I'm sure that's a struggle for, you know, for many.
Yeah, that's, I think for a lot of guys my age, that's, you know, a lot of guys in their early 30s and 20s. That's not my age anymore, but at the time it was. I'm certain that they struggle because there are men that are generally just will generally respect a woman and understand, hey, you're a person. I wouldn't want to go through that, but also, like, I find you attractive. How do I approach uh-huh. you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And exactly. I don't think it. Especially if you know, we're in the New York, New Jersey area, and what single guys like to do around here is go to clubs, and that's just not a great environment to pick up people, unless, you know, like, you're truly, truly attractive. And even if you're truly, truly attractive, I got plenty of friends that strike out all the time because they got that creep approach. Attractive, athletic men. Can't get a date because you don't know how to talk to women. And I think a lot of guys struggle with that. And it's hard to balance that. But that approaching a girl as approaching a woman as if she was a person, as opposed to approaching a woman as if she was a commodity, is completely different. You know, the cat calling,
and you know what? And now, And the way things are today with, you know, the Me Too, you know, well, first of all, with everything being so politically correct, and now the Me Too movement, I mean, I think for, you know, single guys, it's even that much harder today because now, you know, you're attracted to somebody, you want to get to know them. And depending on your approach, you know, you're a big creepo or blah, blah, blah. And, you know, next thing you know, you're freaking being sued for sexual harassment or you're, you know, being called into the office like, hey, what's going on? And so like, hey, man, I just wanted to ask her out on a date. That was it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, is that not okay anymore?
I mean, you know? It depends depends on the approach. It depends on the approach. I think that I personally have never been able to master it, but I'm certain that there is a way to approach a woman and be respectful at work.
Sure, of course.
I mean, you're never gonna get around like you're always gonna be in an environment where there's gonna be flirtation, right? And I guess that's a way of measuring how far you can go with someone. But addressing the flirtation and addressing, hey, there is intent behind the flirtation is probably the best way of doing it. Not just be like, not just this idea that you have guys that just like, will send a dick pic to somebody at work. That's wild to me too.
That's crazy.
I can't imagine doing that. I know guys who have done it. Never ever seen it be successful.
I just don't understand. You know what? It's a matter of to show your manly, your
yeah, your is strength, it though? Advertising.
For me, it's always felt like I don't know what to do. It's kind of like a dog pissing in the fire hydrant, trying to mark your territory. Hey, look at this. Look what I got.
Yeah,
exactly. And no, thank you.
There's a psychology,
really.
Actually,
there is a psychology to that. And let me tell you this.
That was not the way I saw it.
I'll tell you this.
I always thought the dick pic was about like, hey, look what I'm packing. If you're interested, you know, come and sit on this. That's what I always thought.
I mean, I guess.
Watch out for.
But what makes you think? Watch
out for Ricky's airdrop.
my thing is, yeah, it totally is. And you know what? Back in my single days, I had plenty of friends who advised me to send the dick pic, and I just didn't do it. I'm not saying that I haven't done it.
Whoa! You know,
I've done it.
Hey-o.
I've done it, but okay. It's always been with somebody I dated. And I've done it with my girlfriend, and I'm certain that her response was, okay, and?
Yeah, there you go.
It's always been like, okay, what do you want me to do with this?
Womp womp.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter. To be honest, it doesn't matter what you're packing. I think that I think that girls are attracted to more than just girls aren't guys, you know what I mean? Like guys, I see boobs, I see a butt, I'm in. You know what I mean? Girls,
yeah, we're much more visual.
Yeah. And they're certainly we need those more type of things. Mental. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. I understand what you're saying.
And I, to be honest, I think the idea of sending a dick pic comes from our porn culture. We're a generation that was raised surrounded by pornography, and it's not to say that it wasn't around before. It's just way more prevalent in our age.
It's much more accessible to especially to younger children. You know what's funny? You mentioned that because I saw the special on CNN about these guys that, you know, they started watching pornography like very early on, like early teens.
Bro,
and now
that's not early.
They're, Well, but here's the thing. They had, you know, they watched it like if it was regular TV, and it's damaged them because now they can't be intimate with a woman. So even if, you know, they're heterosexual, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that they can't get aroused just having conventional sex.
Wow.
I think, and we're talking about, you know, 22-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yo, like, listen, it did not take much to get me started when I was 22. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, I wonder, man, if that has to do with. I see a nipple and it's like, hey.
You know, you know,
agreed.
You know,
agreed.
Why that happened, though? It was because when the internet exploded, right? It exploded at a good time where our generation was, you know, very, you know, literate when it came to, you know, new technology and things of that nature. So we were able to in and search and, you know, dig up what we wanted to dig up. But
there were no safeguards for us.
Well, but also the parents didn't catch up to the kids in terms of parental control.
Oh, so certainly not.
They would see you on the computer all day thinking that you're doing homework when in fact, you know, you're watching porn for like 12 hours.
I mean, you do at work.
Let me tell you, I'm a little bit older than you guys. That wasn't necessarily my experience growing up because for me, you know, it was magazines.
Magazines and VHS.
The internet. Yeah. And so I didn't have a VCR. I had just had a TV and and later on I had cable, but, you know, never with access to any pornography there. So everything that I, you know, had was on magazines. And that, you know, I had to be careful because my parents could walk in at any time. And I didn't, it was like magazine I might have found over there or whatever. So
the streets were littered with porno bags.
The problem with the our generation was that you know, once you go in, the magazines are different. You know, it's more soft core porn, and you really couldn't go deeper into the sex culture. And when you're on the internet, you go down that rabbit hole, and then you want more hardcore stuff, and then you end up, you know, somewhere where you can't look back. You know what I mean? So
that was one of the reasons specifically cited in that CNN special.
But you can't unsee what you saw.
You're right. They just not only that, but they kept looking for. So, you know, in the beginning, they would just look at regular porno, right, where it's just regular missionary position. But then, you know, they look into like more like, I don't know, lewd or obscene acts. You know what I mean? Like we're talking about, you know what I'm talking about.
It's don't get the same high anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like you need more.
The tolerance is built up and now you need something a little stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Unfortunately, that requires bondage, teeth, and
all that
creamed corn.
You know what, Armando, you asked me before, you said quickly, were there magazines on the streets?
Yeah.
just say a quick story. When I was about, I don't know, I think we're about like 12, 13, and we're walking on the street, and there was like this big black garbage bag just like sitting by a light pole, right? Don't ask me why. Don't ask me how, but one of my friends noticed that in this big black bag was a fucking porno. And when we all run over, we open this bag, and dude, there must have been like 30 magazines.
Oh, Shangri-La, bro. The Holy Grail, you found it.
Dude, it was like finding gold bullion.
Damn, everybody went to their separate houses in a hurry.
Bro.
You know what the worst part about that?
All of us grabbed like, you know, 4 to 5 magazines, and we scattered like roaches in the light, you know.
Do you want to know,
when the light comes on.
Do you want to know the grossest part about that is you don't know who, you don't know the history of those magazines, bro. You don't know who touched them, what was on them.
No. Oh, you know what? I don't need to know, but I'll tell you this. I am grateful because, you know,
it's an experience.
It was an experience. Exactly. Exactly.
So. I got a story for you guys. When I was 12, that's when AOL was popular. That was sending out the free CDs.
Oh, Lord.
You guys remember that, okay, right?
Okay, yeah, I remember.
Yeah. So our family hadn't caught up. We had the internet, but it was dial up. And a friend of mine, I think DSL had just come out. So a friend of mine had DSL, and kid, his name's Victor. And what he did, he had a color printer, and he had high speed internet. So what he would do is he would ask guys, hey, who do you want to see? They would tell them the name. He'd look up the pictures for the girl, and then he'd add his own pictures, and then he'd have these binders of laminated pictures. Yeah, these were like what? You know, Playboy, Hustler, all those pictures, yeah, right? Yeah. He would have a binder of them, and then he would sell each leaf for 50 cents.
What?
It's
the hustle's real.
And then I think what he did is he expanded his enterprise, and he was like, hey, give me $12 and give me your own binder, and I'll fill up the binder for you. And, you know, as a kid, I was like, hell yeah. Here's my binder. Oh, wow. Here's my $12. Wow. Let me tell you that
was one of the best summers you ever had.
What are you talking about? It was a fantastic weekend. I didn't realize that I still had this binder. Into my early 30s, I was going out with this girl.
Oh my god!
She stayed over the night. Right? I had just moved into an apartment with a friend, and my things were still packed up, mostly packed up. And I was dating this girl. She stayed over the night, and I had to go to work, but I wasn't rushing her, and I don't own anything of value. So it's just like, you know, leave when you want, lock the door behind you. What she did, the little mole, is she went through all my boxes, and in my boxes of books was this binder, and I hadn't realized I still had this binder. She pulled it out and she looked at it.
Oh my god.
And then I dated this girl for a couple of months. She didn't even tell me when she did that. No, her filthy little ass dated me for another 8 months before she told me. she that binder. And I'm like, yeah, man, that's like the second time you stayed over. Wow. And you still dated me. You thought I was a creep that held on to like his childhood pornography memorabilia? Like
That's crazy.
Oh man.
Well, so, yeah, man. Us kids were thirsty.
Well, I have not a story, but I guess you can call it like an incident. Joanna was, you know, me and Joanna dated since high school, and she would come over my house on occasion or whatnot. And I guess one of the visits, she decides she wants to open my closet door. And then when she opens my closet door on the right side, she sees pictures of nude women all up and down. I was
a creep.
I was really like a fan of this one porn star called Aria Giovanni. And she's like up and down there. Yo, that was so fucking embarrassing, man.
Did you just
I ripped them down after that.
Did you pretend it was like normal that all guys are like this?
No, I didn't pretend. I was just like, I just had a face like, I don't know, you know, like you really can't say anything. Like, and she was laughing. She was like, ah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like a Joanna response.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh man.
That kind of reminds me of what was that movie? It was a movie about a serial killer, and like I guess he stole a truck and stole a car, and the inside of his car, like the whole roof of the car was filled with like porno pictures. He would just like cut them out and like glue them up top.
Glue them with what?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
You know what? But all this thought just goes to show that men are very visual for us.
Yeah, body, yeah, we're
the physical
to the point where it's aspects. Too much. We're too visual, yeah. Too distracted. Yeah, certainly.
All right, we're gonna go into our next segment, and we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the water cooler. I'm with Armando and Ricardo, and we're going to do our political segment. So I have a couple of questions to send out to the guys to start it off. I wanted to touch on Putin, because I feel like all these, the Trump impeachment and mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things that are going on around the world, I feel like Putin has had a hand in it. So, for the past certainly, 3 years, yeah. You know, Putin has been winning the battle of disinformation in Western Europe and the United States. Looking ahead to 2020, if you were Putin, what would your next move be? Let's start off with Ricardo.
Wow, that's a tough, tough question. What's his next move? You know what? I honestly don't know if I can answer that. The only thing I would imagine is that I think he knows that he's exposed the chink in the armor. I think he knows how to, he's learned how to attack us. He's definitely gotten better at weaponizing information, right? Certainly. So I think that we're going to see continued aggression from Russia in many different forms. But, you know, the way it happened in 2016, I think that's going to continue. I think it's happening now. I don't know if you even see, like, the, you know, RT TV is, you know, available here.
That's wild. In the United States. Yeah, that to me is crazy.
But you know what? I think the saving grace may be China, in the sense that China is also expanding. Their military is, I think, on par with Russia's. I think they still, you know, Russia doesn't compare to us in terms of the military.
I think China's military is more superior.
I think in terms of numbers, they definitely have greater numbers than we do. I think where we beat them is in technology, mm-hmm. You know. But, you know, I don't know. But what I was going to say is I think that China is going to be they're going to keep Russia in check as well. You know, they're neighbors. So eventually they're going to both be chasing the same thing. And in a way, that's good for us, you know.
I mean, China disinformation isn't solely inherent to Russia and Putin. China also does their own form of disinformation. Mm-hmm. In fact, what they do is they send students and professors to be acquainted with our way of life and slowly subvert their people's ideas of how the Chinese Communist Party works. And that's what they're doing in Africa, right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
In Africa, what they're doing is they're fronting the money to develop this poor country and gain the favorable view of the citizens there who wouldn't mind being part of this Chinese empire.
I feel like you're right to a certain extent, but China's intent is more economic, while Russia's intent is more influence. or getting back the influence that they used to have, especially when it comes to Western Europe.
To be honest, I don't think their intent is more economic. I think ultimately they want everyone to be China. I think, and I don't think that Russia has that mindset. I think Russia's mindset is really just, we want to be better than the West, period. We want to get rid of the West. Russia's a huge troll, right? Mm-hmm. All they want to do is troll. I don't know if they have long-term goals with the West, aside from this pervasive idea of nationalism, right? That's what they want to do. They want every country to insulate themselves so that it would be easier for them to come in eventually. So maybe that's the end game. I don't know.
I mean, you know what? You remember Putin was a KGB agent, and he was there firsthand to see the collapse of the Soviet Union, and I think that affected him a lot in terms of how he conducts his foreign policy today. And what he wants is to have those Western. What he wants truly is for the advancement of NATO to stop towards the Russian border and push NATO back.
Of course.
And in order to do that, he needs to get back his sphere of influence in Western Europe and get all those former Soviet countries back under, his control.
And you see, and that's unfortunate that he has that mindset, because, I agree with him in the sense that we shouldn't be on the border. The NATO countries are arming all these Eastern European countries, and they're looking over the Russian border at Russian troops. So like the border is like the Western Front all over again.
It's very hostile.
This should be an end to that. We shouldn't be doing that to them. They should feel safe within their borders. And Europe should as well. If these countries don't want to be under the Russian sphere of influence, they should be allowed to say that outright and, live as they want, whether they want to join NATO or the European Union, or they just want to be independent nations, whatever have you,
Russia's not going to let that. Russia's not going to want anybody to secede from Russia. That's just not going to happen. That's why they're aggressively going for Ukraine, right? They're not a good faith government. They're not a government that wants to isolate themselves. They're a government that I think wants other countries to isolate themselves so that it is easier for them to carry favor with them, right? I think in a perfect world we shouldn't have NATO there. In a perfect world you wouldn't have these two armies looking at each other, facing off each other at an aggressive stalemate, I guess, because it's not like Russia's not attempting to cross over every so often. They're still military.
I guess they proved that with what they've done in Crimea.
Exactly.
Georgia before that.
Exactly. I think the issue here is they want to be an empire. They want to be a dominant power. They don't want to overpower everybody, I guess, but they want to be the dominant power. And to do that, you have to destabilize the EU. You have to destabilize relationships between the Americas and EU. You have to be a troll with everybody. I mean, so I don't disagree with you in the sense that I'd like to see that I wouldn't mind seeing countries, be part of themselves. Be less of the whole, But also you have to understand that that's what nationalism is, and I don't necessarily agree with nationalism. I mean, I don't know. The way all our economies are intertwined, the way all our lives themselves, we live in a global world. So to not want to be part of the global economy or the direction where other countries are going, to be counter that, I don't see how it's beneficial for the individual growth. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, in terms of globalization, that's something that you can't take back. We're in a globalized society. We can't go back to an insular type of society anymore. So, I mean, we have to interact with these countries. We have to, you know, communicate. So, what do you guys think is the biggest threat, China or Russia?
I think China, just in the sense of, I know that Russia has a lot of, you know, they've made a lot of technological advancements, especially in terms of military capabilities. But I think China, not only have they increased their war making abilities, you know, technologically and in terms of manpower, but at the same time, you know, they're graduating a ton of people, ton of college graduates. Are they up to our standards? I don't know. Maybe not all of them, but the graduating a ton of engineers, a ton of scientists, and they're doing these huge projects. I mean, these guys are poised to go to the moon, you know what I mean, and begin, you know, mining up there. So,
China is certainly the bigger power. And
if you take a look at the way they're really controlling their region of the world, where, man, they're building out islands in the middle of the oceans and then claiming these as part of China and taking away, parts of the ocean that belong to the Philippines or Vietnam, you know, where these people used to go out and fish, and now, hey, you can't be here anymore, you know?
I think they're testing, if I'm not mistaken, they're testing a satellite moon. So basically they're building a satellite to work as a moon to light up dim areas, because it's cheaper to take that approach than to go into a town and build a whole power grid.
Wow, that's
wild.
They are by far a stronger power. Russia number one. Russia's a country that's constantly losing money. They've got a bunch of economic sanctions against them. They don't really profit a lot. I don't think they trade a lot internationally because of these sanctions. And to be honest, prior to the 2016 election, I think Russia itself was a dwindling power. It was just a country of a misfit dictator who just ran around stealing everybody's money, right? They would try to do small covert operations here and there, kill a couple people here, try to buy people's, carry people's favor there, because it's those underhanded tactics that they use. Whereas China is a full military, economic, and a military, economic,
I mean, they're social the powerhouse. Fact that they have the economic.
China's
economic aspect of the country gives them the advantage over the Russians.
Look at the way they're helping build out countries in Africa.
Yeah.
You don't
and South America. They have their hands all over South America.
And the reason why is because the United States has taken a step back.
Yes.
The United States carried favor. The United States gave aid there. The United States assisted there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Nationalism has pulled America's step towards the nationalism has pulled back the favors that we carry with other countries because they can't rely on us anymore. Well, China's the country that's stepping in it's not Russia that's doing it. Yeah, Russia's trying to, you know, Russia's getting like small military dominance in areas.
Let's not forget that Russia's in Venezuela.
Yeah. But and but
The
you
second
Russia's
what is it? The second oil rich country in the world?
Yeah. Well,
Is
that's
it the second?
I believe so. I
yeah,
could
but
double check.
what's the point when the world itself is moving away from fossil fuels? Not saying that it's gonna happen. It's not something that's gonna happen next year or even 100 years from now. But it's not something that they can sustain an economy from long term anymore, right? So,
I think that, you know, the end of fossil fuels is still a long time away.
it is a long ways away, but the
Maybe.
reduction is certainly here, right?
I agree with that, sure.
The reduction is certainly here. So there Venezuela is not a country that's making money right now, right? Venezuela is poorly managed.
Well, that, and I also think that they have a hard time selling their crude because
Yep.
it's much harder to refine. But when, hey, listen, when this guy was what's his face? The guy who died, the president of Venezuela,
Chavez.
Chavez, when he was there, you know, he owned the oil company and he was selling oil to the United States. I
Yeah.
think the Texaco is basically Venezuelan gasoline,
Yeah,
or is it Valero? I
but
forgot.
we
Oh,
don't
and
we don't need
he was also donating or giving it at a tremendous discount heating oil to the United States. So
Yeah,
he was making money
to
on it.
poor communities in the United States, which was
It's a way to carry favor.
yeah.
Sure.
All right, so our China talk kind of leads me into the last question of the night. This week, China's National People's Congress has condemned the pulling of a bill that would make wearing masks during protests illegal in Hong Kong. This is the strongest statement by the body since protests began. This is a matter of sovereignty and signals this next stage of the fight of the one nation, two system rule. What do you guys think about the US getting involved in not in a military way, but a political way? And the second part to that question is, if we do get involved, should we tie trade talks to the sovereignty of the people of Hong Kong?
Certainly.
Wow.
Yeah, I think so.
And
This
oh,
is this
and
is
there's a third part to that question. And are you willing to pay more for the items that you buy as a result of that?
You know
Wow,
what?
Paul, these are super loaded questions, man. This is requiring brain power.
I'm not a tremendous consumer, so yeah, I would certainly pay more if it meant that we have some sort of assurance that allows
Well, there's
this
not going to be
well
an
how.
assurance if our the stuff that we buy from China are going to go up. That means, you know, that's going to be a conflict between us and China.
Yeah, but
Well, let me say this.
what's
Look,
going on in Hong
if
Kong, I
we're
think, is wild. You have
Listen, I'm going to say one thing.
the
If
China's
you're going to tell me I'm going to
authoritative.
pay more money, if you're going to tell me I'm going to pay more money, because to support the people of Hong Kong in their fight against Chinese aggression and oppression, then I'm willing to pay a little bit more money versus that I'm just going to pay a little bit more money in a tariff. So, yeah, you know, I agree. We had to do something about the Chinese and the way they manipulate the currency. That's been the complaint for years, right? So yeah,
Correct.
great, Trump for taking some action on that. Okay, But now, you know, everything is going up, and at the end of the day, I'm the one losing out, and I don't see, at least I don't see the great benefit to that this scenario. But if you're going to tell me I'm going to pay a little bit more for Chinese products or for my products in general because we're going to use that money to support the people of Hong Kong, because that's the right cause, because these people are fighting for independence, just like we did here so many years ago. Then exactly. I'm all for that. I'm okay with that. Okay. I'd much rather my money go to something like that than to my money going towards, I don't know, dropping bombs on innocent people in the middle of nowhere, like Pakistan or Afghanistan and places exactly. like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the America has to get back in a habit of backing democracies.
I'm sorry to say, I think that the history of the United States is, if you take an objective look at it is not one that's always been on the side of democratic movements around the world.
Oh, no. Listen, America is an empire, and it'll do anything to keep its...
Remember it Darfur?
Do anything to keep its... Yeah.
A great example of this was that recently... the U.S. policy towards Israeli settlements have changed, and now those settlements are legal according to the United States. And that's sure. going against every international community, you know, like the UN and NATO. So, you know, the United States has a long history of not supporting, you know, the right choice in terms of democracy.
That itself is an anomaly. That decision is
what about the Shah in Iran?
Why? Let me ask you a question. Hold on. Why do you think that that's an anomaly?
Because I don't think that there would have been another American government. So let's say another American administration who would have made this push.
But why do you think he did that though?
Oh, because I'm certain he's profiting somehow. It's truly transparent that any move he makes is a move that'll profit him in the long run, right?
Sure.
Certainly.
Or at least that's the way he's behaved in the past.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the way he's behaved in front of our eyes. I mean, think about it.
Because you know what? I mean, if you really think about it, I think he's just basically keeping with American tradition in the sense that he's siding with, you know, the economic power in the argument. You know what I mean? In this case, the Jewish people of Israel have right. the economic and military power in that region. You know, no one can stand up to them. The only people that have a chance is Iran, and you know Iran is not going to come out head first. You know they're not going to come at them directly. They're going to use a proxy.
You're putting it more eloquently than I think he's thinking of it. I just think that Donald Trump thinks of it as in winners and losers, super basic terms, very black and white terms. I don't think he's got. I don't think he's got the patience to look at things in the gray. It's very black and white. And if there was any what?
I would want to know. So what is this financial or political gain that Trump is received in exchange for him? Now changing that policy towards the settlements in Israel.
I feel you like
know, was there some
I
kind feel of like financial the, gain?
The, or, I mean, it, for him, it's always there, property, right?
I feel like the Israel decision. Well, first of all, my opinion is that he's looking towards the future, and he doesn't want to. How can I say it? Like tie himself down, or like he wants to be. He wants to be accepted with open arms in certain countries.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And
he wants to be adulated.
Yeah, exactly.
So
that's simple as that.
So, you know, that's something that, and plus I don't think this decision only came down to him. I think I think Pompeo had a big hand in this because of apparently he's citing Christian doctrine and shit like that. So you know, the end of days thing and all this shit. Yeah. So
I think Bolton was also a big backer of that policy before being ousted.
Yep. There.
So yeah, that to me is that's another level of crazy, right? You're making your decision solely because it's your religious belief, and the end game to your religious belief is kingdom come.
Yeah, I mean it's a perverse, perverse thinking. And you know what? There's a whole set of people in this country that have that same mentality of okay, we need to protect Israel because you know they're the keepers of the Holy Land. And you know we need to protect that, and you know the end of days and all that. And you know what?
Yeah,
it's you know there's a big segment in this country that I mean it's obvious. I mean we have Trump in the White House. You know what I mean? So
yeah, it's super obvious.
Yeah. So yeah,
and I noticed that a lot of Trump supporters are also like conspiracists. So I think. I'm not a religious person, but for me, religion feels like a conspiracy. I don't know how you guys feel about that. To me, it feels like a conspiracy. But
do you mean that it's a tool to oppress people to keep them? To control them
to oppress and misinform.
Okay. In order to control.
Yeah, certainly.
Okay.
Certainly. A clear evidence of this are mega churches, right?
Yeah.
I never read the Bible, but plenty of religious people have told me that Jesus was not a rich man. And that, and that he never considered being rich or profitable a requirement to go to heaven or even a consideration to go to heaven. If anything, I think one of the I don't know if it's a proverb, but it's certainly been told to me that it's easier to get a camel through a needle than to get a rich man in heaven. I think that's from the Bible.
Are you saying because these preachers are making all this money
from their
followers?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Certainly.
That's a part of a new, I mean, and I'm not saying that this is right. That's part of a new movement.
Oh, yeah. The American evangelical, right? The capitalists, the capitalist Christians.
And the whole theory is that, you know, by me living this extravagant lifestyle, and if you contribute to it, then my extravagant lifestyle will trickle down to you. And one day you'll live the way I
live. Trickle down economics.
Yeah. And how many of your
you know
fellow
what?
Churchgoers
are
flying around in private jets?
How demeaning is that, the whole concept of trickle down economics? Like, yeah, I'm gonna take all this money and you know whatever change falls down from my pocket. Like I'm gonna eat this burger and like any crumbs that fall down through my crotch and onto the floor.
That's a fallacy. That means that the 99% of Americans are scavengers. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it's so demeaning and like these people just.
It's just greedy people hoarding. It's just greedy people hoarding.
It's ridiculous.
There isn't an individual doesn't need that much money. Like, I don't see the reason for having a billionaire. And I also, I'm not a socialist. I'm fairly liberal. But I don't think that all billionaires are evil. I just don't see what I personally would do with that much money.
Shit.
I'm not after a wallet. It's not about the money. It's really about the power that comes with that money.
Yeah.
And that's why they want to keep accumulating.
I mean, but that, I mean, then how low is your self worth?
Fuck that. I think I'm getting pushed into being a socialist because I feel like a lot of the decadence that's happened with the rich is associated with these ultra millionaires. Like, for example, this Jeffrey Epstein guy, right?
I don't mean minimalism, but I would say capitalism.
Yeah, yeah. This Jeffrey Epstein guy, right? Yo, he was running an underage sex ring.
Yeah.
That included millionaires and billionaires and high-profile people. Yeah. And nobody's going to tell me anything different. And this was an actual sex ring. It wasn't that fucking the Hillary Clinton sex ring that they were talking about.
It wasn't the pizza gate where they're eating the kids in the pizzeria.
No. This was an actual one. There's nobody showing up to a pizzeria with a gun, right? This time,
yeah.
Nobody's showing up to freaking Jeffrey Epstein's house with a gun. But you know that.
He went to jail for this.
Yeah.
He went to jail for that.
No.
So yeah,
I want to say that. People with that much money end up not knowing what to do with themselves and they go into these dark places. And that's where you end up wanting to be friends with Jeffrey Epstein because you know what? Fucking regular women that want to, you know, just do it for fun is not enough for you. Now you want to fuck children. You know what I mean? And this is what I'm talking about. You go to these extremes and being a billionaire, you can get away with anything. I mean, these people got away. I bet you there's a list somewhere that of all the people that's done business with Jeffrey Epstein and all these people are just going to get away. You know why? Because they're billionaires and ultra millionaires.
Yeah, certainly. Mm-hmm. I don't see people knocking on Prince Andrew's door.
You saw that interview? It was ridiculous.
People, don't get me wrong, people are outraged, but I don't think they're outraged. They're not outraged enough to forcibly remove him. They're not outraged enough to investigate him. And I don't think they're going to investigate him for the sheer fact that he's a monarch, for the sheer fact that he's part of the royal family.
After seeing that interview, nobody's going to tell me that guy didn't sleep with that teenager in the photo.
Bro.
Nobody's going to tell me otherwise.
He didn't do a good job of lying.
Nope.
Which special was this?
It was an interview with Prince Andrew. Was it the BBC? I think it was the BBC.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, no, the guy's a creep. The guy's a creep.
I'll have to watch it.
Yeah, so, all right, guys, let's end it there. Thank you for our listeners for being there, and we'll see you in the first week of December. Thanks to all the listeners of the Water Cooler Talk, and I just wanted to remind everybody to hit that subscribe button. That helps us a lot. And keep following us. We will be back in the first week of December.